Hey guys, don't forget the 2023 Street Cop Training Conference, Nashville, Tennessee, April 23rd through the 28th. You do not want to miss this. So far, guest speakers, Rob O'Neill, the Navy SEAL that was responsible for killing Osama bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, U.S. Marine, Medal of Honor recipient, jumping on an IED to protect his platoon. Fox News host Tommy Lahren returns for 2023. Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff Mark Lamb, Sheriff David Clark, and more to come. You don't want to miss this event. We additionally have 20 of the country's top law enforcement educators giving you the best experience of your life. You will leave this event knowing more about your job and how to be proficient at the things you do, hands down, any other event that you'll ever attend. I personally guarantee it. Don't miss out. There's a room code at streetcop.com for our room block and room code at the Gaylord at Opry is where the event's taking place. Don't miss out on a discounted rate. The rate is from Sunday to Thursday. Put that in and find yourselves at a half-price room. Split it with a friend, but make sure you get there. You don't want to miss this event. It is going to be that good. If you trust me and you trust Street Cop, trust that you will leave there feeling like you've had an experience of a lifetime.
You trying to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to the Street Cop Training Podcast. Your host, founder, and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino. And today I have with me a gentleman who's going to share his story. He's on a mission, doing great shit. And we're thankful to have you here. No other than Trung Nguyen. You can give us your 2 to 3 minute bio of who you are. Got a cool video on YouTube I watched that was legit, man. Got a good, pretty cool fucking story.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, guys. Well, my name is Trung Nguyen. Born in Vietnam. My family and I fled communist country to seek life in America. We came here. I grew up in Chicago, grew up in the hood, grew up there almost basically all my adolescent years, all the way up to my teens, very poor in a gang infested area with a lot of, you know, gang violence, drugs, grew up in a Section 8 home, grew up on food stamps, and had a rough upbringing, but you know, that helped mold me into the man I am today. Left, went to the Army after 9/11 because I wanted to fight for my country and give back. So I joined without my mom's consent, snuck out to the recruiter, signed a Ranger contract, which is 11 Bravo option 40. A month prior to shipping, told her, hey, I'm going. She was crying. She's like, I want you to be a doctor or a typical Asian mom. Story. After that, I went to boot camp down in Fort Benning, did all my training there, passed RIP, joined 2nd Ranger Battalion, did approximately from 03 to 07, served with them, did some tours in Iraq. After that, I wanted to pursue my other goal, which was to be a police officer. So I am now a police officer for 14 years, serving from three separate departments right now. So
yeah, and you can't tell us where you work just yet. You gotta wait till February, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where did you move to when you moved outside of the Chicago hood in your teens? You guys said you moved out.
When we say moved out, I mean, we still stayed around the area, just in a little bit better of an area in uptown, towards more of the Vietnamese population. Again, you know, it was tough because I didn't have a father, so it was just my mom, and she raised us, and yeah, we tried to make the best of it. She was always working.
How many brothers and sisters?
I got two older sisters and a younger brother that was born here.
So your mother fled Vietnam, three kids and pregnant.
Yes.
What happened to your father?
He had to stay over there. He couldn't leave. They wouldn't allow him to leave. So he told my mom, take care of the kids. Wow. And raise them right. So
have you ever met your father?
I met him once when I was 9. We went back over there. And I met him, but that's pretty much it.
What was his position now about, you know, having all these adult children? Is he still alive?
He is definitely still alive. You know, he remarried, has his own kids over there. But the two other children, my sisters, aren't really his kids. My mom had children with somebody else, but I'm his kid. So
that's interesting, dude. So is there like a lot of animosity towards your father because of that? Like, did he ever have an opportunity to come here or just could never get here?
I think he never had the opportunity to get here. And my brother actually my half brother from his side actually tried to come over here first to try to meet us, but he crossed the ocean in a boat with like 70 people. And out of the 70 people, two survived. It was an 80-year-old woman and a 5-year-old kid, female kid. Everybody else died from starvation. They got thrown overboard and from disease. So, wow, and he was unfortunately one of them.
Wow. But you never met him?
No.
God.
No.
Damn it. That's fucking wild, dude. So how old was he when that happened?
Right then, he was in his early 20s. So he was already a lot older than I was. He wanted to go, like I said, go there and just get everything situated first to meet us over there, but never happened.
Wow, dude, what a wild story, man. People don't realize the struggle of people who are emigrating to the United States for a better life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like you have a lot of compassion for people who are trying to come here for a better life.
Absolutely, I do. I mean, that's what we do. And my mom believed in the American dream. She believed in what America stood for. So she's like, you know, we can't live in this communist regime, you know, this dictatorship. We got to get out of here. So she tried to do what's best for us. She had $10 to her name. She didn't know anybody here.
Wow.
Yeah.
So dude, tell me about that. She brings you guys here. How'd you guys get here, on a plane?
Yeah, we got here in the plane. We arrived. They had us in a FOB in the Philippines. So we stayed at FOB Freedom for a year. They got us processed. And once they got us processed, they asked my mom, where do you want to stay in the United States? She's like, where does they have four seasons? And they're like, Chicago. She's like, I'll go there. And so they just shipped us over there.
So she wanted to live in four seasons. She wanted the winter, the summer, the fall. Why was that? What was the thought there?
I have no idea, man. I have no idea. I was like, why can't you pick somewhere warmer? You know?
Yeah,
like,
dude, you guys could have went to fucking Miami Beach or some shit.
Yeah, right?
Now, she has three kids. How old were you guys at that time?
So I was three at the time. And my sisters are like 10 years older than me. So Wow. They're already in their teens, yeah.
No, don't speak English at all.
No, none of us.
And you guys come over here. Did you guys link up with Vietnamese people here in Chicago?
Yeah, so I think they just placed us in this like Section 8 building with a lot of them were just like immigrants. Half of them were like Vietnamese. Half of them were like, you know, every other race. And they just threw us together. And literally, my mom got here, and the first week, she went down to the Vietnamese town and just started working right away. I mean, she didn't – she needed to make money. So
were your sisters watching you as a baby while your mother went and worked?
Yeah, pretty much, man.
Dude, so that was like, what, 1984, 85, 86, something like shit?
Yep.
What a crazy story. So what did your mother do for a living?
So she just tried to do anything possible. She was washing people's clothes.
Wow.
She kind of worked in the beauty industry a little bit when she was in Vietnam. So she was like, you know, drying people's hair, you know. They didn't allow her to cut hair because she wasn't, you know, someone who cuts hair. But, you know, like somebody who after a haircut gets to wash their hair, she would do like pedicures and manicures and stuff like that. Just anything possible to make money.
What does your mother say now about it? Like, are you still real close with your mom?
Yeah, I am.
So what are those conversations like now, and what is she doing? I'm curious.
Yeah, she's thank God retired, and she's just enjoying her life right now. But she said, you know, doing all that was definitely a struggle because she knew no one, but she had no choice but to push forward and take care of the family, you know. So she said everything that she went through just made her a better person now.
How old's your mom?
Yeah, she's 72 now.
Okay, so she was in her 30s when she had you, huh?
Yeah.
Wow, dude, what an interesting story.
Yeah, man, it's crazy.
And what did she do for the rest of the time here? Like, what was she doing?
So when she was able to make some money and my sister got older, they put their money together and they opened up a couple of nail shops and, you know, they started thriving on that. So
really? So they ended up doing real good. She had the American dream actually happened.
Yes.
That's a good story, bro, but your mom's a fucking saint.
Yeah, she's a hardworking woman, and I you know, I picked that up from her, just the way she is and how she's like against all odds, you know, come over here knowing nobody, $10 to your name, and being able to do all that because she willed herself, you know, she had that willpower to not fail, to not quit because she knew what was on the lines, you know, her family back home. Her kids here. She had to provide, and she did.
Do you remember a point in your life where it started to seem maybe getting a little bit better for you guys? Remember when that occurred and you're like, oh, all right, we're getting some relief here?
Yeah, I would say like towards my late teens, it got better. You know, things start to be a little bit better. We started to get a little bit more creature comfort that I didn't have when I was younger. I would say around that age.
What was it like growing up in the hood in Chicago?
It was intense. I mean, we were right smack in the middle of like a gang warfare. It was like the Latin Kings on one side, the conservative vice lords on the other side. And they were always shooting, constant shooting. I remember on the staying in a high rise, seeing constant gunfire, hearing constant gang violence, going down, walking to school, seeing all these, you know, drug addicts, crackheads, you know, seeing all that. It was. But after a while, you know, you grow numb to it in a sense. You know, it was a shocker in the beginning, but like anything else, when you continue as you see it, you know, that's the way of life and you have to adapt to it or not, you're going to get eaten up by the streets.
What's it like going to a school in a place like that?
It was rough, man. You know, I didn't speak English at all in the beginning. Fuck. I got picked on a lot when I was a kid because we were poor. So, well, my mom went to the thrift shop. She got what she could. And a lot of times I was wearing girl clothes, pink overalls, stuff like that. And, you know, I would get picked on at school and people would make fun of me. And I just had to keep driving forward, man.
I don't think a lot of us here understand, or at least a far majority of us, the struggle of immigrating to a new country and the things that you guys are faced with and what you had to deal with. That's insane.
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, and if people don't say that the environment doesn't have an effect on you, it's bullshit, because it does, you know. I'm not going to sit here and say I was a perfect child. I wasn't, you know, I didn't have a father. I was searching for a father figure. So growing up, you know, I hung out with the wrong crowds for a while. Not saying I was doing gang stuff, but, you know, staying out late, drinking, just skipping school, you know, because that's the group I hung out with. I thought they were my brothers. I thought they're going to take care of me. But I wised up, you know, just one point in my life, and it was like a fork in a road. Like, if I keep going down this path, I'm going to be nowhere, you know, and I can't do that. My mom sacrificed all this to come over here. I got to do something about it. So I decided right then and there I was going to change my life, and I did. And I got almost pretty much a straight A's in schools and just finished with, you know, with great, good grades. And
wow. And then you decided, I'm going to go join the Army and be a Ranger.
Yeah, you know, it's a funny story how that worked out. Her friend who was in Florida, her son was a lieutenant at the time in the Army, and he just finished Ranger school. So she sent my mother a VHS of Ranger school. And she's like, hey, this is what my son just did. I'm so proud of him. And mom's like, so she gave me that VHS. It's like, hey, you should watch this. You know, at the time I was like, all right, whatever. I popped it in. And I saw, you know, freaking U.S. Commandos, and they did the whole Rangers. I was like, holy shit. And so I started going to Barnes & Nobles, and I started doing some research on, you know, the Rangers and, you know, their lineage and everything like that. And I was like, man, this is something I want to do. Then 9/11 happened. I was like, I'm going to fucking go do this thing.
It's awesome, dude. So what was Ranger school like?
Oh, man. So I would say a kick in the nuts, as best as I can put it, man. It's just a big sucks fest. So here's two things that people don't realize. It's like Ranger school is a leadership course, right? Every single infantry officer has to go through that course. It's a leadership course. To be in the Ranger regiment at the time, you have to go to another selection first. It was called RIP at the time, a Ranger Indoctrination Program. So that's the first evolution to get to earn the tan beret and the scroll. So when I went through RIP, it was just a huge smoke fest. I mean, they kicked your ass from the beginning to the end. I mean, it was unrelenting, like how much these savages were brought down on us. I mean, I was just, people were just dropping off, quitting left and right, and it's on you. You know, it's all the mental games. Like, are you going to quit on yourself? Like, you went this far, you have aspiration to do something like this. Are you going to quit when you don't have anybody to cheer you on, when it's like 4 o'clock in the goddamn morning, you're on the woods, they have you finish a ruck, then you come back and now you're carrying this rucksack on top of your head, and there's a bonfire like 10 feet away and it's burning high, and they got sleeping bags and they got hot dogs, and they're telling you, you can quit anytime. You go there, hang out, and, you know, have a fucking hot dog, and you start seeing your buddies drop left and right. and it's a real gut check, you know, then you really have to see, like, is this something I really wanted? You know, some didn't.
So you finished Ranger school.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, dude. That's fucking awesome. That's a big honor.
Yeah. It's something I, you know, so when I finished RIP, it was something that I was extremely proud of. When you see, when you set a goal and you first look at it, like, this is what I want to do. And you train so hard for it and you work your ass off and you go through all the steps and you go through all the adversity. And at the end, when they tell you to don your tambourine and they pin that scroll on your shoulder, it's just, there's no other feeling, man.
Was your mom able to see that happen for you?
Unfortunately, my mom couldn't make it down to that one. So I had a RIP instructor pin my scroll on. Still dope, though.
How did you feel about your mom not being able to make it there?
I'll be honest with you. I was used to it. Growing up in school, since I was a kid, I was in plays. I was in doing certain things, and my mom was never there. She couldn't be because she needed to provide for the family.
Right.
You know, and she was gone all the time. And my sisters have to work. Usually I'm just there. So it was something that I kind of grew numb to, man.
It's badass, dude. You know, but did it mold you, huh?
Yeah. I would say adversity is something people should not be afraid to seek. Adversity molds you. Adversity is what's going to make you better, not the comfort zone. So
did you call your mother and say, hey, I graduated, you know?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did. I called my mom. And it's just like, I knew you would.
Oh, that's like, cool.
So it's like, thanks, mom. I appreciate it. So
now you're in Ranger school. You graduate and you said you go do tours in Iraq. And was that just Iraq or Afghanistan as well?
No, just Iraq. We at the time. So there's three Ranger battalions and they're always rotating. So at the time, we went to Mosul in 2004 in 05. And that was fun. I mean, fun as in. That was like the peak of the war, you know. That's when shit hit the fan, and they sent us to only the most dangerous places. So we got to do some work. What I thought a Ranger would do, I got to do.
Yeah, and you thankfully got to do it.
I was so thankful that I got to see all that, you know, because when I got to the Ranger Regiment and when I got to being able to deploy, you're just surrounded by it. Men's amongst men's. Mm. I mean, you know, like these guys were the epitome of a Ranger. I mean, these guys were studs, proficient in tactics. They were a PT studs. I mean, they had the mindset and the leadership skills. And man, in the beginning, it was rough. I was like, God damn, what did I get myself into?
No shit.
You know, because, you know, you graduate from RIP and you're thinking you're the shit. You get smashed down immediately when you get there. You're just a small fucking fish surrounded by fucking sharks and, you know, a bunch of hungry dudes. They're like seasoned, you know, and you get there and they give it to you. And the thing people don't understand is you can quit any time when you join the regiment. There's nothing that says that you have to stay. And they can kick you out if you don't meet the standards. So there's dudes who pass, come there, do not meet the standards, and get booted out and sent to the big army. So it's on you to earn that every single day. And I always tell my guys, and I always tell people now, you got to earn your place every day. Earn it. Because if you don't meet the standards, you're gonna get dropped. And that's how you should operate life every single day. You should earn that spot. You should always push to be better, to be a better you than yesterday, so that you can prove to those guys to your left and right that you belong with them, that you belong in that environment with, you know, with those type of individuals.
Again, bro, thank you for your service. It's amazing. You went over there and did the work that you did. We all appreciate it so much. So you go over there, do your tours, you see a lot of combat.
Yeah, we saw a lot of combat. I mean, it was the peak of the war, man. It was crazy. A lot of direct action missions, sometimes two, three times in one day that we're out there doing hit after hit after hit, you know, and it was insane. And saw some amazing heroism from these guys. I mean, I've never seen such bravery under immense firefighting. And being able to be so calm and cool and collective and dish out orders and lead men in the battle. But that speaks volumes, you know, with training. If you're well trained, and you're surrounded by people who are in such a high level, you have no choice but to meet that level or exceed it. And it's the same thing with like an MMA fighter. When they get ready for a fight, they don't go to camps and fight dudes that they can beat. They fight dudes that are better than they are in whatever field they're in, be it wrestling, be it boxing, be it Muay Thai. They're always going to go to a better camp with a subject matter expert in that field to get their ass kicked, because they know if they're going to get their ass kicked in training, it's just going to make them that much better in that actual fight. And that's the same thing with combat. Is you get your ass kicked during training and you surround yourself by people who are so fucking undeniably amazing that you have no choice but to raise up to that level.
Now, you come back home, you decide I'm going to be a cop.
Yeah. So that whole thing happened when I was grew up in the hood. I remember it was a dangerous neighborhood that we hung out in, and we were playing basketball on the streets. And I remember this cop, this patrol cop, that was his beat. He came by and he stopped, he got out of his car. He approached us. He's like, "Hey, I'm officer such and such. You know, this is a dangerous street. You guys already know, you guys grew up around here. This is my beat. This is what I work." And he gave me his business card. He's like, "If you ever need anything, kid, you give me a call." And I thought that was like, man, this cop, like, at the time, you know, like you said, you grow up in the environment and everybody always like, "Oh, cops are bad, cops are bad, cops are bad, you know, don't trust the police." But this dude came out and said, like, really sincerely cared. And that really, I was like, dude, that's so awesome. You know, this guy, he didn't have to do that. He could just continue driving, but he didn't. He stopped and he talked to me, and that really affected me. I was like, this is something I want to do. I want to be able to serve my community and give back. So that kind of was in the back of my head on something that I wanted to accomplish, was I wanted to make a difference in my community one day. So that's what sparked me wanting to leave my military service to become a police officer.
So then you end up back here, back at your first police academy. I don't know where you started.
Yeah.
We can't say where you are right now, but
yeah,
let's at least start the last two where you went.
Yeah. So I got back. I tried to do the whole college thing and that didn't work out, you know. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I got 60 credits, but it's just surrounded by college kids who are very in the bubble. They didn't understand what I went through, you know, coming from somebody who just came back from what I did.
You had a tough fucking life.
I was like, yeah. I was like, you know, I don't think this college thing's cut off for me. And I was like, and then I, you know, the whole thing with the police department, I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to, you know, and here's the funny thing. How I started with that was, you know, I was taking BJJ and I was rolling with this detective from Skokie. I was like, man, I want to be a cop. You know, he's like, so he printed me out a bunch of departments that were hiring. He's like, yeah, these are some good departments for you to start off with. So I applied to all three, and Park Ridge, Illinois picked me up right away. I think they picked up two coppers out of like a bunch who tested, and I was one of the police officers who tested. So off the guys who tested got picked up. So I worked for Park Ridge Police Department, went through Celia Police Academy, graduated with Top Physical Fitness and Leadership Award. And I worked for that department for close to 2 years before I was like, so Park Ridge is a real rich neighborhood. And I was like, you know, being a rookie cop, I wanted to run and gun, you know, and all they had there was suspended license arrest, you know, probably like a typical rich suburban neighborhood, you know, crime, if you want to put it that way. I was like, where can I go to test myself? Because I want to be the police. I want to go out there and run and gun and whatnot. And LAPD came up in my mind. I was like, well, shit, why not? You know, like LAPD seems like a legit spot to work. So I applied for LAPD, and it was a 6-month process, and they picked me up, and I went through another police academy. So there, to be honest with you, at the time, which was 2011, their police academy was legit. I mean, you know, they shaved your head. You had to shave your head. You had to double time everywhere. It was actually a police academy at that time, where if you didn't meet the standards, if you fail the scenario twice, you get kicked out. If you fail the firearms portion, you get kicked out. They were relentless with that. And I appreciate that. I appreciate what type of officers they were trying to mold at the time, you know. And yeah, did my sting out there, worked for 77th. Then I went to Olympic Division, where I finished off my time. my mom was getting old. She needed help. So she didn't want to come out to California. So that's why I left to come back. Or else I would sit out there and try out for D team, which is their SWAT team. That was something I wanted to do.
Again, we can't speak about where you work now, but you certainly are a full-time SWAT team member now on where you work. Is that correct?
Yep, on a big metropolitan police department.
Gotcha. There you go. Perfect. How did the academy differ from, let's talk about the LAPD one, say, since you said it was difficult. How was it different, if that was a difficult academy, how was it different from what's called basic training and comparable to ranger training? Would you say they were in line, or ranger training was just that much? It was like 25 times more wild.
Night and day. I mean, they try to replicate it, but there's no way.
Yeah, I figured as much.
It's a different animal. Like being in the military and going to that type of training, it's a different world.
So it must be police academy a fucking cakewalk for you, right?
You know what? It was only because what I did prior in the military that prepared me. I was already hardened in my mindset, so that anything they threw at me, they knew when they looked at me, they're like, yeah, okay, you're the class commander or what, you know, whatever, you're a squad leader. Cause they knew, like, somebody who's been disciplined, who has that mindset to know that this is, you know, this is part of the game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was tough, but if you're a civilian going to the police academy, that would be extremely tough. It's tough. Right. Yeah. But if you've done something, what I've done, I'm not saying it's a cakewalk, because, you know, I'm not here to, you know, but it was something that was extremely manageable. I found it was actually fun. So
did your academy classmates know you were a ranger, or when did they find out?
Yeah, they found out about a week in. And you know how it is in the police academy. Usually they put guys who are in the military as, you know, class commander or squad leader position. So I was a squad leader for my academy at LAPD. Our class commander was an Apache helicopter pilot.
Wow.
He was a major in the Marine Corps.
Wow.
Super awesome dude. Yeah. The Ganji, which right now, you know, it's funny. I talked to him. I was like, when I talked to the police, I was like, the Ganji, you know, you got such a skill set in flying. Are you going to come by when you get out of the LAPD? Are you going to fly the airships? He's like, nah, man, I'm done. Come to find out, he's now on the airship flying for them. So
yeah, so dude, like when I was in my second academy, my friend Tim was a paramedic. So we came back after the academy, we had hangars. So it was US Park Police, they had three helicopters. And I'll never forget, like, hey, is anybody a paramedic? And Tim's like, yeah, I'm a paramedic. Tim was older too.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, let me. We had to go back to the classroom as post academy. We were cops already, right? But we weren't on the road yet. And they held Timmy back. And I was like, what do they want? He's like, they want me to be on the helicopters. And I'm like, already? He's like, well, yeah, dude, there's not many paramedics. Paramedic's a big fucking title to have, and Tim was an active paramedic. And I said, would you tell him? He said, no, I want to be a cop first. But he ended up doing some police work. He wanted to go experience being a cop. And then he's been on the chopper since. So he's been on the chopper since his career. So same thing. He, like, at first was like, I don't want to fucking do this. Like, yeah. I became a cop to be a cop. I didn't become a cop to be a paramedic. I was a paramedic.
Yep.
But that was his calling. Actually, a bunch of guys from my class ended up on flight crews at those at that agency, but which is pretty cool.
That is super cool.
Yeah. Actually, my third academy, we had a lot of guys from the Marine Corps, a lot of guys coming back from war.
Yep.
And I heard on several occasions, like, dude, this place is fucked up. Like, at least the Marine Corps is like, they build you back up, and they're building, like, they're just fucked up here at this third one I went to. And I'm like, do you think it's worse than Marine Corps? Like, yeah, in some ways it was worse. This place is worse than boot camp. And I'm like, no shit. And they're like, I mean, we got our asses whooped for six fucking months, 2 hours of homework every night, skin shaved heads, right? Like, nonstop fucking games. They never let off on us once. It was complete bullshit, right? There's a point where I agree that there's got to be some kind of military bearing, right? But then there's also, like, the excessiveness of it. We have to learn how to be cops, and they just completely missed the mark on it. I can't emphasize that enough. They completely missed the mark.
Yeah, I could say the same thing with our third police academy. It was a complete joke. I mean, and it's the exact opposite from what you guys went through. It's a cakewalk. It was like literally college campus. And to me, you're doing a disservice to these recruits, to these future police officers. You're giving them such an easy police academy that they think it's going to be easy out there on the streets. And then when they get out there and they're dealing with the situation of the real world stuff, they're like, oh shit, I don't feel prepared. because you're not. They baby you. They walk you. It was very a big pill, a hard pill for me to swallow, coming from what I've done to this one. I was like, this is a complete joke. Complete joke.
So what are you doing now, Trump?
Yeah, so I'm retiring in February. February 20th, it will be my 10 years in this police department. I decided to hang up my hat and I felt like this, I've done everything I wanted in the law enforcement realm. I accomplished all the goals I wanted to do, and that this place doesn't challenge me anymore. So being an entrepreneur challenges me. So I started my company in 2019, which is We Go Home. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm going to be running We Go Home full time.
What's We Go Home?
We Go Home is my company that I started. I say it started in 2019, it really started back in the Ranger Regiment. And it is, and We Go Home is a message that was sent out to let people know that, hey, man, you got to be the best you can be, physically, mentally, emotionally, your skill set. You got to be sharp, because it's not about you. It's about those to your left and right. And you got to make sure that they get home, and that didn't hit me as hard. That hit me hard when I started to meet, my guys, family, girlfriends, wives, and whatnot, and got to know them and see, what they're surrounded with. And so when we went to war, we always get briefed like, hey, we got to do our mission. We got to do this job. But at the end of the day, we got to get home. So it was a big deal. And that stuck with me. I was like, so that's where I created We Go Home.
What does We Go Home do?
We are a human performance supplement apparel line. So we push the mindset to the community, fire, police, military, that, like I said, it's not about you. It's about those here left and right, that you got to stay sharp. You got to be an asset and not a liability to your organization, because this is bigger than you. That the jobs that we do in those career fields, we sign a blank check. We're not promised to come home at the end of the day. So we have to prepare to the best of our abilities, because it's not if things are going to go bad, it's when things are going to go bad. And that's the mindset that you have to have every single day. You got to sharpen your freaking spear every single day, so that day when adversity hits, you're prepared to meet it head on and not hope that you might make it through, but know that you have the skill set to make it through, to bring your brothers and sisters home.
I first want to say that I'm aware of how probably anxiety ridden you were to make a decision to retire this early. And it hangs a lot of people up at times to be fearful of the future. When did you make that decision? And were you faced with fear about leaving a career and going to essentially uncharted territory, trusting yourself?
Yeah, so that was last year. I was actually going to leave last year, but my friends were like, hey, man, just stay 10. You're going to be vested. You're going to get a retirement badge. You might as well stay 10. You got one more to go. And I was like, that's a smart thing to do. So that's why I stuck around for this last year. But to answer your question, Dennis, it's scary. It is scary. I'm not going to lie, because being in the job that we are for so long, I served 14 years, in law enforcement, 4 years in the military, 18 years total of service. So I'm used to the structure. I'm used to people giving me commands, what my daily task is going to be, having insurance, having the net blanket of knowing that one day, if I do 20 years, I'm going to get a pension, that I have two paychecks a year. So you get into that comfort zone, right? You get into that comfort zone, and I work with buddies. All they do is bitch. Oh, five more years. I can't wait 5 more years. I can't wait to get out of this. I didn't want that for me. I saw what We Go Home has become. And God pointed me towards that direction. I was like, if I don't take a chance now and go all in this, I'm going to regret it when I'm old. And I'm one of those that I don't fuck with the comfort zone. I don't want to die with regrets. I want to be able to know when the day that, on my deathbed, that I've done everything that I've set out for myself. And I was not fearful to take that chance, to take that, to have that burn the ship mentality. So was it scary? Absolutely. You know, like I'm about to go, like you said, venture into the unknown. I'm not going to have two paychecks a month anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to have insurance. I'm not going to have a promise of a pension. But I know that this is going to be where it needs to be. I know the difference that this organization will make for the community in the future. And that's the risk I'm willing to take.
When did you make that leap of faith? When did you say, all right, so I'm going to do it? Do you remember that moment?
Yeah, I definitely do remember that moment. It was a moment when I was sitting in my damn squad car. And I reflect on myself like, I could do six more years of this. Or I can take this chance and do something fucking great. And that then and there, I was like, I'm going to fucking do this. This place doesn't challenge me anymore. It's like, I'm just dead in the water. And I don't want to go through life like that. I don't want to go through life just to skate on by because I'm comfortable. I don't like being comfortable. You know, I want to be challenged. I want things to push me. And this is going to push me because it's going to leave me no choice but to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
So
what do you want the next 5 years to look like?
I want to erect a big facility down in Texas. This is where we're going to do our thing. And we're going to be hosting a plethora of personal development, helping the community of, you know, flying in veterans and other police officers, firefighters are dealing with mental illness, depression, anything like that. Get them together, work with that, help other, you know, people in the community being assets, physical training, you know, putting them through courses to make them better, to sharpen their skill set. And at the same time, get my supplement company to where it needs to be, which is for the community, by people in the community, giving them great premium stuff that is not underdosed, that is truly transparent, that's going to help them perform in their fields.
What are some of the products that you guys have now?
So we have a pre-workout. It's doing very well. We have a greens and reds. So we instead of separating the greens and reds into two products, we combined it. So you're getting that with, you know, a bunch of great stuff in there, digestive enzyme, mineral complex, PICO2, probiotics. So that's something that I harp on people to get on because it's really good for you. We have an intra product, a BCAA, EAA. We have a protein that's being ready to be released. We've got multiple other products. So we're going to have a whole line of products.
That's awesome, dude. What kind of, now obviously, you talked about earlier that we have somebody in common, Ashley Cummins, who is AKA Smashley, rated one of the top 10 females in the world during her career at Mixed Martial Arts UFC. Are you guys employing a lot of those mixed martial arts trainings in We Go Home?
So Ashley is part of the organization. You know, she... If you're going to talk to her again, I'm super proud of her. So we did a content shoot down in California not too long ago, and Ashley was a police officer down there, and she was just talking to me of how, you know, this job was draining her. This wasn't something she's happy with anymore. She wanted to pursue her career as an instructor. And I told her, why not? Why don't you go do it? You know, why are you waiting all this time? Go get it done. And a month after, she quit. She quit the police department. Now she has her own training thing going on. So, yeah, to answer your question, not only do we bring in people who are MMA fighters, but everybody in our organization are assets. We got, Gabe, who is a full-time SWAT team leader out in California. He's going to be part of our tactical performance area. We have Jake, who's a former police officer who medically retired because he had knee replacement surgery. They couldn't do the job anymore. Owns multiple CrossFit gyms in Oregon. He's our human performance coach. We have my friend Baxter, who's a BORTAC commander down in Texas. He's part of the supplement game. And so we bring along many, many people who are very skilled and very good at what they do, top level performers, and we go home.
That's awesome, dude. When did she quit? Was it recently?
Yeah, it was pretty recently.
I got to call her.
Yeah, you should.
I'm going to call her right after this.
Yeah, you should. She's doing very well down there. Her school's picking up very well. We're going to be doing stuff with her in collaboration. We're going to be helping her out, getting her supplements for students and help her facilitate whatever she needs to facilitate to make assets out there. So.
Yeah, right now when you said that, my inner entrepreneur and good-hearted nature of myself and always wanting to help people just is ignited. And I can't wait to call her and just say, hey, tell me what you got going on, because I get fucking pumped when we talk about business, right? I enjoy it tremendously. It is my forte. It's where I like to be. And I constantly try to analyze of, you know, I don't know, just constant. I'm a big thinker. So, you know, for me to be doing the street cop training thing, the work is so important. And I really believe even in this realm of law enforcement, one, we should all be together, teaming up, working together, no question about it. But two, I'm like, man, we really have a lot of the right people in the positions to actually change and make this thing better. And it's a real exciting thing to be doing. And I'm sure she feels the same way. And it's just badass to meet you, because you're in the same space that we're in. It's essentially, I don't mean that in law enforcement training. I mean, you're a guy who was a cop and is now taking the leap of faith into business. And man, I'm really gunning for you, dude. I hope that you really do well. I'm pumped. I'm a resource for you. I'm not at the end of the road, but sometimes a little bit further down the road than some folks. And my advice to everybody listening to this podcast and to you is there is no quicker way to accelerate than a constant obsession with education. And I think education on all forefronts. So education of understanding money, understanding business, understanding mindset, understanding self-discipline, understanding the obsession that you must have if you'd like to do something in this space. Understanding the obsession with self-awareness, understanding there's just so much to know, and it's exciting once you start to understand it. So, man, I think the education can never stop. I'm really, really pro-education. Obviously, I run a police education company. And it's been really cool to watch. We had a guy yesterday in class, and he goes, you know, I've taken 5 classes so far. His whole career has changed. This dude's a killer. I mean, you get perspectives from all of us. The way I did things, the way one of our instructors, Tommy Brooks, did things, the way Kenny does things, the way that Brad Gilmore does things, the way that Rob Ferrero, all these guys who teach these high-level proactive courses, they just make this mold of who you're going to be. And we're just – dude, I'm pumped to see badasses coming out. Tactical mindsets, better report writers, people more knowledgeable with case law. They know the streets better. They don't got to guess. Really, really cool shit, man. So I'm just pumped that you're taking the leap of faith. And I know there's a lot of anxiety behind it, but keep your eyes focused straight ahead. And I think the important part of this program that we did today was there might be some people who are sitting on that ledge of do I go or do I not? And the water is cold, but it's refreshing. Start swimming across that river of fear. You're looking for that better thing. I'm telling you, it's on the other side. But it takes a lot of discipline, dude. You know, a lot of people don't want to step outside of that comfort zone. It's uncomfortable, but it's worth it. You know, and it's just my 2 cents in the whole thing. So where can people find you and We Go Home?
Yeah, so you can find us on Instagram. My tag is just Trung B Win, T-R-U-N-G, B as in boy, last name Win, N-G-U-Y-E-N. And my page for We Go Home is We Go Home.
It's awesome, dude. Listen, man, I appreciate you taking the time to be here today on behalf of the law enforcement community. I think you really was a good story to tell, a real nice story of somebody who immigrated to this country with nothing, made something out of it all, struggled through a very difficult place to live and came out on the other end of it squeaky fucking clean. And it's pretty fucking awesome. You should be proud of yourself.
Thanks, Dennis. I just want to say one last thing to the viewers is that we touch on this, mindset's everything, right? And everybody has goals and aspirations, but not everybody's going to go after their goals and aspirations. They're just going to let it die. And don't let your fucking dreams die. Don't let your goals die. You know, we live such a short life. I've seen death. I've seen all that. And I can tell you, you don't know when you're going to die. So go after it. Get after your fucking goals every single day. Work at it relentlessly. Head down, eyes forward. Keep trucking along. And you will get there. Just don't quit on yourself. Just take that leap of faith.
It's awesome, dude. And I think you're somebody who's proven that you are nimble. You've moved around quite a bit and done a lot of different things for such a young gentleman. So, and dude, if I don't see you on the 23rd, happy birthday, motherfucker.
Thank you, bro. You too.
Thanks, dude. I appreciate it.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.